A man had received a phone call from his doctor's office. It was quite a surprise since he had only been at his doctor's office a few days prior. And yet the receptionist had asked that he would immediately come to the office, that they had some news to report. As he sat in the doctor's office waiting for the doctor to come in, he was quite curious as to what he was about to hear. The doctor made his way into the office and looked at the man and apologized that he was having him come in this day. But the doctor looked at him and said to this man, he said, "Sir, I don't know how to tell you this, but I have some bad news and I have some worse news." The man's eyes widened and said, "Well, doc, I like shooting straight, so just give it to me." He says, "Sir, I'm sorry to tell you, but you only have 24 hours to live." The man could barely believe what he was just hearing. And he paused for a moment to reflect on the words. He realized that this was the end. And yet he had also remembered that the doctor had said that there was news that was bad and there was news that was worse. And so he quickly turned to the doctor and said, "If that's the bad news, what's the worst news?" And the doctor says, "Well, I forgot to tell you yesterday." I don't know about you, but if that was me sitting in the doctor's office, knowing that I had mere minutes to live because of the doctor's negligence, I would do everything to cause a stink. I would make sure that even after I was gone, that my family would go after this doctor. Because, friends, as nice as I may appear at times, under pressure, in difficult situations, in a crisis moment, I realize that there are moments that I can respond in a negative way. Over the last few weeks, I've watched the world as they have responded to one another in the midst of this coronavirus. I've watched some really good things. I've watched people in the community who have reached out and helped neighbors and picked up groceries and picked up medication. Some great responses. But like you, I've watched others respond in very negative ways. I don't know how many times I've gone into the grocery store to see shelves that have been emptied because people have been planning for the end of the world. And I've watched people as the stress has risen in their lives, and they've responded in ways that just may not be appropriate. When we're under pressure, our response is tested. And it's in the difficult times, in the critical times, that we often find our character being tested. This morning I want to talk to you about our response under pressure. As we've been looking at the end of Jesus' life, his final moments, we're going to look this morning at three conversations that Jesus has just before he crosses the finish line for his mission. And as we look at these three conversations, we're actually going to see three responses that we need to have when we're facing crisis situations, difficulties, and those moments where we find ourselves under pressure. So we're going to begin by looking at Luke chapter 23. We're going to read three passages, and the first says this: "Two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. When they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him there, along with the criminals, one on his right and the other on his left. Jesus said, 'Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing.' And they divided up his clothes by casting lots." Luke 23, 32 to 34. The next passage in Luke 23, 39 to 43 says, "One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. 'Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us.' But the other criminal rebuked him. 'Don't you fear God?' he said. 'Since you are under the same sentence, we are punished justly, for we are getting what we deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong.' Then he said, 'Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom.' Jesus answered him, 'Truly, I tell you, today you'll be with me in paradise.'" Lastly, in John chapter 19, verse 25 to 27, all these verses that blend together in these final moments for Jesus, it says, "Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, 'Woman, here is your son.' And to the disciple, 'Here is your mother.' From that time on, this disciple took her into his home." Friends, I want you to know that all three verses take place from the moment that Jesus is about to step on the cross to the moment that he's just about to die. This is truly a crisis moment. This is beyond anything that we are facing today, not to minimize what we're facing, but beyond any crisis that we've ever faced. Jesus is carrying the weight of the world upon his shoulders. He is hanging on a cross after having been severely beaten, unjustly tried, and mocked by the crowd. And now he is hung on a cross. And you would think that Jesus would be so focused on his own well-being, You would think that Jesus would be so focused on the mission that God has for him. But the truth is that in the middle of his own crisis, in the middle of his own difficulties, being under pressure, Jesus responds in three different conversations. Show grace. We need to show grace. There's this moment that Jesus is led to the cross. And I can assume, based upon what we've read of the unjust trial, the elements that took place of Jesus' flogging and all the mockery that's taken place, that Jesus is probably prodded on his way to the cross. Little jabs and little kicks and pushes and sorrow added to his physical well-being. And now Jesus is on the cross. And he's hanging there with these two thieves. And he's facing utter pain. And the Bible tells us in Luke's gospel that Jesus utters some words. They're words that are not said underneath his breath, but they're words that not just the two criminals, not just those who are closest to the cross, which would have been the soldiers themselves, but to those in the distance would have been able to hear. As he looks upon those who have done all that they've done, all the pain, all the suffering that's been brought to him by those individuals, as Jesus looks out to them, he has a conversation, but not with them, but with his Father, and he utters these words, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." You see, I've thought about these words many times. These individuals do not deserve to be forgiven. They haven't asked for forgiveness. They haven't come to the realization of their sin. There is nothing that these individuals deserve that is positive. And yet Jesus utters these words, and it absolutely perplexes me. And I've come to the conclusion of this. Is that the reason why Jesus utters these words is because he knows that they require grace. So what's grace? Grace really is unmerited favor. It's getting something positive from God that we don't deserve. It's the experience that each of us have that in our sinful states, in our rebellious moments, that we still receive God's blessings on our life, even the blessing of salvation. And in that moment, Jesus offers these people who have flogged him, who have hung him on the cross, who have mocked him, he offers them something they don't deserve. Grace. Now, you may wonder what allows him to show this kind of grace. And I don't know all the dynamics, and you might just think, well, it's just the purity of who Jesus is. But the truth is, friends, is that there is something in Jesus' words that give us the clue as to why he is uttering these words. Because not only does he say, "Father, forgive them for their sins," he says, "For they don't know what they're doing." They don't know what they're doing. Now, this word "know" means that they don't have the ability to grasp their actions. There is this gap between what they're doing and the ramifications. And Jesus is saying, "God, I know what they deserve, but I'm asking you to give them something they don't deserve because they are unable to grasp what they're doing." And when we find ourselves in difficult situations, we need to look at those who are producing trials in our life and those who are producing crisis and those who may be putting pressure, and we need to show them grace because so often they don't know what they're doing. When I was youth pastoring, it was in the very early months, and I remember there was a night where we had a gym night and we were playing volleyball. We're hanging out and having a great time, and there was this girl on my team, and she went up to make a play near the net, and she just completely messed up. Now, I had such lack of wisdom back then. I'm not sure I have any more today, but I had so little back then. And I just wanted to be the cool youth pastor, and I wanted to gain the favor of my students, and so I was just trying to be funny. And so when she made this play, I turned to her, I said, "Hey, maybe we need to trade you. Anybody on the other side want to come over to our team, and we'll trade you this girl?" Everybody laughed, and we joked around, and I came over, and I said, "Hey, I'm just kidding," and we kind of moved on, and I didn't think anything of it. A couple weeks later, a parent came to my office, began to talk to me, and in that conversation, he revealed to me that this young lady had been extremely hurt. She had been centered out. She had been isolated. She had felt embarrassed. She felt this small because of my stupidity, because of the way I treated her. I got to confess to you, I felt broken in that moment. That was the last thing I wanted to do. I loved my youth group. I loved our teenagers. I didn't grasp what I was doing. I didn't really understand what my words were conveying to her and what it was doing to her heart. And if I had realized what it was doing, I would never, ever have said those words. And Jesus teaches us that in the moments where we're under pressure with people, that it's so important to use grace, because there are so many people who are responding in negative ways to us who simply can't grasp what their actions are doing. And in those moments, we need to be as graceful as can be, even when it brings about difficult moments for us. I read a story this week of a man who was coaching a baseball team. This was just a team of 8-year-olds, and so nothing really to get too worked up about, but this team had really gone through a difficult season. They hadn't won a game the entire year, and there were a couple good players in the team, but the team also had a bunch of players who were absolutely terrible. It was the final game of the year, and to their surprise, they were only down by one run. Unfortunately, they found themselves in this position at the bottom of the 9th inning with 2 out. The next batter to come up was this young player who showed no aptitude for baseball at all. I mean, you can imagine in your own mind what he looked like, but he's just one of those kids that as you see, you go, I'm just not sure that they should be playing sports. And this kid was the next one up to bat. The coach was quite concerned because he knew that they had never been this close in a game, and yet this was their moment. And this kid who had never hit the ball before came up to bat, and the pitch came in, and the kid swung the bat, and to the surprise of everybody, hit the ball just far enough that he was able to run to first base and get a single. Everybody was amazed. This had been his first hit ever. The next guy to come up to bat was one of the team sluggers, one of the individuals who truly knew how to play baseball. He got up to bat, and the pitch came in, and the ball was hit, but it kind of blooped up. The kid who had been at first base, who had hit the single, his first single ever, really didn't understand the rules of baseball. And as he stood there watching this ball loop up into the air and start to come down, he didn't know what to do. And so he just simply reached his hand up and he caught the baseball in the air, providing the team with the 3rd out and losing the game. The coach didn't know quite what to do, but to the surprise of everybody on the bench and to all the parents who felt completely defeated, their opportunity to win this game had been lost by their own player. Instead of getting angry, the coach said, everybody jump up and start to cheer for their, and he named the player at first base. And the kids didn't know what to do, but they all jumped up and they started to cheer and applaud the kid, and the kid felt so proud. He didn't realize that he had lost the team the game. He didn't realize that everybody had hopes had been crashed because of him. All he knew was that day he had hit his first ball and he had caught the first catch in a baseball game that he had ever caught. He felt like he was on top of the world. After the game, the parents came over to the coach and they thanked the coach and they thanked him for not responding in a way that the kid deserved. But even in the coach's own feelings of defeat, he was willing to show grace. And they said to the coach, not only did our son hit a ball for the first time, not only did our son catch a ball for the first time, but coach, we want to thank you because our kid has barely been allowed to play any other year. You showed him what he needed. You showed him grace. Friends, in the middle of your difficulties, in the middle of pressure moments, no matter what is going on, we need to show people grace, provide life. They may not grasp what they're doing. There may be a gap between their actions and their ramifications. Like Jesus, let's show grace. The second thing that we see in this passage is not only did Jesus show grace, but he presented hope. He presented hope. The Bible tells us that there are 2 thieves on the cross. And if you were to read through the Gospels, you would discover that these 2 thieves insult Jesus greatly while they're on the cross. We're not given any insight into what they say. We don't know for how long it lasts. But if you read through the Gospels, you'll see that both of these criminals insult Jesus. And yet there's a turning point that we read about in Luke's Gospel. Because as one of the thieves continues with his insults, he looks up at the top of the cross and sees the words, King of the Jews. And he turns to Jesus, he says, hey, if you're the king, why don't you save yourself? And why don't you save us? And rather than responding in alignment with the other criminal, The one who's been silent, who had previously been insulting Jesus, speaks up. And he says something that surprises everybody. He says, hey, look, we deserve to be here. We're criminals. We belong here, but this man is innocent. Oh, it's a change in character. Yeah, I mean, this man had been throwing insults, but now he's recognizing the innocence of Jesus. Perhaps he had been watching Jesus through the whole proceedings. Perhaps he watched as Jesus had kindness in his eyes while people were looking at him with evil and with anger. Perhaps he heard the words, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do. I'm sure every element of watching and hearing Jesus' response caused this criminal to change his mind. And something took place inside of him where he realized that Jesus didn't really belong here, that he might just truly be the Son of God. And here is this criminal, and he is just mere hours away from breathing his last breath. I can't even imagine what that would be like, to know that this very day that your life is coming to an end and every dream is put aside, every hope is dashed. I mean, everything of the future doesn't even exist. You are knowing that everything comes to an end today. And in that moment, he turns to Jesus and he says, would you remember me in paradise? Would you remember me when you come into your kingdom? I don't know about you, but after having been insulted by someone, I'm not sure how I would respond. But Jesus does something so unique. And in verse 42, we find that Jesus says, today you will be with me in paradise. Today you will be with me in paradise. He doesn't react. He doesn't throw the insults back. He presents hope to the man. This man who thought it was all over. This man who thought that his life had come to an end and there was nothing more that he could ever do to change it. And yet Jesus steps in and says, today you'll be with me in paradise. Jesus presents hope, says, hey, this isn't the end. There's more to come. There's something eternal. He presents hope. Friends, I don't know about you, but in this season, I think that people desperately need hope. The more I watch what's going on in the news, and the more I see through social media, this coronavirus is escalating people's fears. And as I've talked to people this week and in the previous week, I realize that people really are living in uncertainty. They're concerned about sickness. They're concerned about their relatives. They're feeling the isolation and the need to be with people, but they can't be with people. They're concerned about their finances. They're concerned about their job. And there are individuals out there who are doom and gloom type of people who are saying, hey, this is the reason why it's happening. And they're speaking judgment. They're speaking all kinds of negative things. And I'm not saying that there may not be little fragments of truth to what we've allowed into our world. But friends, this is what I know. People going through this situation, people going through difficulty, regardless of what they've contributed to it or not contributed to it, they need hope. They need somebody to step into their life like Jesus did for this man and say, hey, it's not over. Tomorrow will be brighter. This season won't last forever. There's going to be a sunny day again. Eeyore, stop your whining. Realize that there's going to be a great day in the near future. And as you're interacting with people, whether it's through social media or phone calls or whatever it may be, my encouragement to you would be, regardless of the uncertainties you're facing and the fears you're facing, that you would be like Jesus and you would find as many opportunities to present hope, to speak life, to tell people that while they've put a period on the end of the sentence, that God has simply put a comma on the sentence. This is just a little pause moment, but there's more to come. And I believe that the greatest days are ahead. I believe that God's still got great plans for us, and we simply need to present hope to the people around us. I read an incredible story this week about a man who had spent many days or many summers in Maine. He had been gathering with some of his buddies, and they were having a dinner party. And as the conversation was bouncing back and forth between various topics, he started to talk about his summers in Maine. And he shared with his friends that there was a place that he used to spend time in called Flagstaff, Maine. For whatever the reason was, by the municipal government or the state the state government, they had determined that they were going to flood this town and build a man-made lake and provide a dam and probably provide power for the rest of the region. But that meant that they were going to flood this town. It was months away from this taking place, and what this man shared was that at that point, that all renovations stopped. People stopped painting their houses. They stopped repairing broken windows. They stopped cutting the grass. They stopped looking after their properties. You see, they looked at what was coming down the road, and they realized that the city was coming to an end, and why put any effort, why put any time, why put any energy into one's property when just in a few months, water would come and erase that entire community? And he made this statement that I want you to see on the slide. It's so important. He says this: where there is no faith in the future, there is no power in the present. Let me say that again because it's so important. Where there is no faith in the future, there is no power in the present. There's no power in the present. You see, if you don't have hope, if you don't believe that it's going to get any better tomorrow, you lose your power for now. And friends, what I want to tell you today is that in that moment that Jesus is on the cross, he realized that man was looking into his future, and it seemed like there was no hope, and he could barely get through the moment, and yet Jesus steps in and presents power for the moment because he gave him hope for the future. Our job as Christians is to step into people's lives and to provide power for the present, to get them beyond the crisis, to get them beyond the difficult situation, to get them beyond what they're facing today, to give them hope. And even when you're facing your own difficulties like Jesus was upon that cross, even when you're facing your own uncertainties, we are still called to bring power to the present, to give people hope for the future. Step into people's lives and respond in your crisis, in your difficulties, by presenting hope. Lastly, and perhaps maybe the most important, and yet something that is often ignored, Jesus responds in his own crisis by giving time. By giving time. It's really close to the end of Jesus' mission. And friends, I can't even fully grasp what he was facing. You see, prior to even getting to the cross, Jesus is in the garden, and the Bible tells us that he is under so much pressure that he is sweating drops of blood. He says to his disciples that his soul is grieved, that he is under incredible sorrow. He's about to be betrayed. He's about to be denied. He's about to be handed over to the religious rulers, to go through an unjust trial, to be flogged, to have his garments cast to the side, to have a crown of thorns placed on his brow, and then to be nailed to a cross. He is about to face incredible physical and emotional agony. And yet, that's not even the worst of it. Because in a short period of time from the moment that we're about to talk about, Jesus is about to carry your sin and my sin upon his life. He will be so burdened that he'll actually say the words, my God, why have you forsaken me? He will feel the absence of God, something that we're going to look at next week, the absence of God. He is carrying a burden unlike anything anybody's ever faced. And friends, I need to be honest. The burden that Jesus carried in that moment is greater than any crisis and any burden that any of us is facing. It is greater than anything we will ever face. What Jesus had upon himself in that moment was unthinkable. And yet the Bible tells us he does something so strange. As he's hanging on the cross, getting so close to the completion of his mission, he looks down, and the Bible tells us that he looks to his mother. In John's passage, in verse 25 to 27, he looks down at his mother, and he says, "Woman, your son." And he points over to, or not points, but he looks over to John. And then he says, "Your mother." And the Bible tells us that from that point on, this disciple named John, one of Jesus' closest friends, that he would look after Jesus' mother. It seems like a very insignificant moment. But here's Jesus carrying the weight of the world, literally the weight of the world on his shoulders. He is facing the worst situation, and he takes time to look after his mom. He takes time for his mom. He looks down, and I know we've got the very succinct language, but it's basically this. He's like, "Mom, I've been thinking about you. I've been caring about you. And my heart is broken because I know I'm not going to be able to be there to provide for you. So, Mom, I just want you to know John's going to take care of you. And John, this is my mom. I want you to look after her. I want you to take care of her. I want you to treat her the way that I would treat her." That's what Jesus is trying to communicate. He takes time for his mom. I don't know about you, but in my crisis moments, in my stress moments, in my under pressure moments, those are the moments where I am so task-driven that I have a hard time focusing on the people around me. And there have been so many moments where I've got myself so busy and so worked up because of the things that I'm pursuing, because of the crisis, because of the stress, that I miss it sometimes. I miss taking time for the people who matter most. Jesus doesn't do that. He takes time for his mom. Last week, Pastor Steve had been away on holidays, and so we're trying to figure out how we're going to communicate everything with the plans of moving to an online church. So it was Thursday, and I knew that I would be videotaping my communication piece to the church by myself, and so I had set up the prayer room and had organized everything and videotaped my own communication piece and then took it to my computer and uploaded it and did all the editing and just working through everything, and there were a few steps along the way that just took a little bit more time than I needed. I had an agenda because I had a 2:00 conference call, and so I had the certain timeline by which I needed to get out of the office to do an errand. And so I was in my office, and I'm trying to get this done. It's taking much longer than I anticipated. And Pastor Travis comes by my office, knocks on the door, and pops his head in. And so I turn around and start to make chit-chat. I thought it would just be mere seconds. But Travis continues to talk to me about what Lionheart is doing. And so I'm listening, but I find myself turning in my chair, going back to the work I had been doing. And he starts to tell me about the great work that Lionhearts is doing in Kingston and about providing food for people in the community, people who are in need, people who are being faced with the realities of this virus. And he begins to share with me about what is taking place. And he is sharing with passion, and he's just pouring out his heart. And I'm back and forth of giving him eye contact, looking at my computer, giving him eye contact. And I'm saying the things, and I mean them, but they're not really heartfelt because I'm so distracted. I'm focused on the task. And I was like, "Yeah, that's great, Travis, that's great, that's great. Hey, listen, I'm really sorry. I got to get this done." And so after a few moments, he ends up leaving my office. Get the video published. And then the next day, I'm at home, and Pastor Travis and his wife Jessica had bought Ainsley and I a pound of this coffee called Shea Piggy, and it is absolutely great. I've been promoting coffee this week, and so if you're ever wondering, ask Pastor Travis about it. I had opened it up about a week ago, and so Ainsley and I decided that we would have a cup, and so I made a cup of coffee, and I decided to take a picture just to thank them again for the coffee. And so I set up my coffee cup and the bag of Shea Piggy, and I take a picture, and I send it to him and said, "Hey, thanks again for the coffee." And as I'm doing this, I start to think back to some social media posts I had seen earlier that morning. Some posts that he had posted about what they were doing in Kingston, providing food for people who are homeless. And as I was looking at these, I sitting there in the calm of my living room, I realized that what Travis is doing is absolutely incredible, and I hadn't given him the time that he actually deserved. I had been so focused on the task, and so I felt bad in that moment. And in that moment, I took out my phone, and after sending the picture and thanking them for the coffee, I said, "Hey, Trav, just want you to know I'm proud of you. I said, I just want you to know that you're doing a great job. It's amazing, and I'm really sorry I didn't give you the time that you deserved yesterday." He was gracious in his response. He knew that I was super busy. But it reminded me, as I sent that text, that I am so often trapped by the task. I feel like everything is bigger, that I don't have time for people at times. And yet Jesus, in the midst of his own crisis, responds to his own mom saying, "Mom, I've got time for you. I've got time for you." In this isolation moment, maybe you have been spending a little bit more time with your family, a little bit more time with the people who really matter. Maybe you've been playing games and puzzles. I stopped by Walmart today and every puzzle was gone. Maybe you've been playing, doing puzzles or whatever, just interacting, and you have got reacquainted with some individuals in your home that have become strangers. Because over the last few weeks, maybe your work has caused you to be so busy that you just didn't have time. Maybe the pressures of life have been so overwhelming that you just didn't have time. Whatever the excuse that would come to your mind, you've been task-driven, and now you find yourself being reacquainted with some people who have become strangers. Friends, I want to encourage you to take time, to give time in the middle of your own difficulties. Take time with the people who matter the most. There's a story about a man by the name of Charles Adams. He's the son of John Quincy Adams, the once president of the United States. Charles Adams used to keep a journal, and it was found one day. And in that journal, he had written that he had been away with his son fishing, a very busy man. And he wrote in his journal, he said, "Spent the day fishing with my son. Dash, what a waste of a day. After all, he was a busy man, and giving up a whole day to go fishing seemed like quite a waste. What a day of fishing, what a waste." His son also kept a journal, which they were able to also find. And as they coordinated the two dates, they turned to his son's journal. And his son had also journaled about that fishing day. But in his son's journal, it said, "Spent the day fishing with my dad. The greatest day in my life. The greatest day in my life." You see, when the task seems to be more important than the person, then we give ourselves excuses in the middle of our crisis, in the middle of our stress, in the middle of our pressure. We give ourselves excuses to prioritize the task over the person. But what people really need is our time. They need your quality time. And so, friends, my encouragement to you is that in all you're facing, make sure you take time for the people who matter most. Get to know those people who may have become strangers in your home. Get to spend some quality time with them. Be like Jesus, that no matter how difficult the situation may be, that you never fail to give time. Mother, there's your son. John, there's your mother. Take care of her because she matters to me. Give people time. There was a Jewish psychiatrist by the name of Viktor Frankl, and he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. He wrote in this book that he had been taken to one of the Nazi gas camps. He had lost his family and his friends, all murdered. He became the only person remaining alive. And as he was in this gas camp, one day the Gestapo came to him and stripped him of all his clothes, even took his wedding ring, and so that he was standing before the Gestapo completely naked. As he stood there, he began to reflect upon all he had lost: his family, his friends, his wedding band, his clothes. And then it struck him. He wrote in the book that he realized in that moment that even though everything had been taken away from him, there was one thing that couldn't be taken away. There was one thing that the Nazis couldn't steal. There was one thing that they couldn't remove from him. The one thing they couldn't take was his response, how he would respond in this difficult moment. And friends, when you're going through the trials, when you're going through the difficulties, when you find yourself facing cross moments, would you look to Jesus? Would you look to his response in those situations that seem so impossible to respond in a proper manner? And would you show grace? Give people what they don't deserve. Would you give people the time that they need, taking time with individuals? And would you present hope to people, speaking about their future, presenting power for the moment? And as you do, you'll help them get through their difficult situation. I'm going to ask that you'd bow your head and close your eyes just for a quick moment. Perhaps you're here this morning through your virtual means, sitting in a place that's so comfortable, but the reality is that your life is not that comfortable. And you're finding it hard to find hope. Maybe you've never given your life to Jesus. And I'm going to tell you this, is that no matter how difficult it gets, as long as I have Jesus, I know that I still have hope. And if you have never given your life to Jesus, and you need this hope, I'm going to ask that you would pray this prayer with me. So just in the privacy of your living room, would you pray after me? Dear Jesus, I need hope. I pray that you would forgive me for my sins. I pray that you would come into my life and be in charge. I pray that you would be the Lord of everything I do. And rather than going through life without hope, I choose to grab hold of hope, to grab hold of you because of what you did on the cross. Today I ask you to be my Lord and be my Savior. In Jesus' name, amen. And church, before we close today's message, today's service, I want to pray for you. Jesus, I'm asking that you would be with my family and friends, those who are part of our Orleans congregation and those who are maybe friends or connected in some other way, or maybe even those who are just checking us online. I pray that in the middle of their trials and their difficulties, that they would be like Jesus. They would show grace. They would present hope, and they would give of their time. God, that they would respond in a way that matters most. It may be hard, but give us the strength to be more like you. And wherever we are, may we sense your presence in an incredible way. So bless my family today. Bless my friends today. And I pray you'd be with them and keep them safe. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, friends, for watching today. We look forward to seeing you next week.